the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious and bestow of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face this day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. So what should we look at this morning?
Scott. I was looking at something this morning where I became aware that there were things that I could talk about in group and things that I couldn't talk about in group. And it's one of those things that if I heard that, I would say, oh, well, what is it that I'm not talking about because I'm going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize I was getting that message.
Yeah. So you're getting the message that there are things you could talk about and not talk about, but there was no consciousness that that was a belief that was going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess the underlying belief was that was letting those messages land is that it's not okay to feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
That at this level of practice and being at the monastery, and then, you know, all the things it says to me, look at that person. I mean, they're really lit up, and boy, look at all the things they're exploring, and I don't really see anybody else wasting time and feeling bad. And we ended that 2013, right? And it feels kind of believable because, in a way, that I don't want to give attention to feeling bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the process that I missed there was that there's the process is there's a level of unacceptability about you.
Uh-huh.
And so don't bring that out, and you and I will work it out.
So there's just this a process going on of unacceptability of certain experiences
mm-hmm.
of this person.
Yeah.
And it's not like they magically go away, or that they're, you know, that it's a code for that's something that will be worked out between. Egocentric karmic conditioning.
Go to this dark room, close the door, and I'll just drain all the energy off of you. And I like how you said that the experiences that you aren't allowed to share, because it is the process is general like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because I didn't actually realize there was a feeling bad process going on,
mm-hmm.
Because it seemed kind of subtle. It's just. We were at a workshop with Sharon and Shuni yesterday, and it's sort of this believing what it tells me I am.
Uh-huh.
So the I guess the subtle level of feeling bad is you are all these life qualities. You know, you're curious and intelligent and humorous, and then the space, and then the but, mm-hmm. and then the evidence how I'm not those things. And it's just going on enough. So then there's kind of like, I don't know, there's kind of like a, there's a little bit of a registering, like, ouch.
Yeah.
But not really addressing that.
Yeah.
Because it actually feels, quote, comfortable to me to be at that level of energy. But of course, it feels comfortable to ego to be at that level of energy. Like, if I was just expressing those life qualities and that was it, that would be amazing, right? You would just be life expressing life. But ego's not going to go for that.
Yeah.
So it's got to throw that little, the little doubt in there that you're not quite life. You know, and then in a way that feels comfortable because I think because I'm used to identifying with ego and that's ego's comfortability to be running the show basically, to be draining that energy off in that way.
So what you're saying is that you feel there's this certain level of energy that you're comfortable with. Or that, you know, have become accustomed to this.
Yeah, accustomed to
this level of energy. And so that level of energy is maintained, even though there's these qualities that one would attribute to being in the light room, like being curious and, you know, just being lit up and all of that. There is that continual siphoning that goes on, so the energy never is allowed to just really expand into those, fully into those qualities. And there's this, you know, it's just what you started to talk, you were talking about in the beginning. It's that siphoned off in this dark place that is never brought into group or,
or
into consciousness. And it's, what comes to mind is this energy maintenance system.
It's the energy maintenance system, exactly. And again, you know, if I heard something like, oh, don't talk about that, that would be the message to talk about it. But it seemed like, oh, yeah, you can talk about anything. There's this big room, you can talk about whatever's there. And then there's something like hidden under the floorboard.
Everything but that, not that.
Oh, well, it seemed like I cleared the room out and everything's been talked about, you know, except for this. Behind the scenes kind of deal. And one of the doorways into believing that feeling that stuff too is the process of comparison. And I've actually been practicing with that quite well, I thought, for a while. And in a way, it's funny, this is such a process of practice where I'm practicing with it. And what happens is I'm not experiencing the, quote, pain around the comparison anymore. And then I stop, basically I stop watching and practicing at the level that I was practicing with. Yet it's still going on.
It just seems like it's a similar process to that. It's under the floorboards.
So the same thing that I was saying about, you know, so it's just subtly comparing me to other ones. And they're not wasting time, you know. But I don't even know, I guess I'm just not hearing it exactly like that until I say it out loud. And it's like, oh, that comparison's still going on. And I lose, Scott loses always in that comparison. And it's just the doorway to, now I can believe all kinds of things that it's saying. It's saying to me about me, and I'm in a process of, there's someone to evaluate, even.
It's just the door to...
And I guess too, I'm just seeing like, oh, this is that broader process that we're all going through. You know, we address these like process of comparison, and then we duped into thinking we're done with that, and then it comes back around, and you just see a little bit more subtle layer to that, and then you talk about it, and you bring that into awareness, and then you see a little bit more subtle layer about that, and in that way, it's like, oh. Well, there's no problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, that was such a lie about this is unacceptable. You won't be accepted in basically here or something. It's like, well, this is actually what we're doing here. It's like why we're all here.
Exactly.
Is to go through this process.
Yeah.
So it's obviously it's like the opposite. You know, you don't belong here because this is going on for you. And it's like, well, the looking at it is the belonging.
Yeah. and to just know that that it's not, it's like not a process that comes to an end.
Right.
Like, you know, oh God, I saw it. That's it. You know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, something that arose for me is that when you were saying you just keep seeing it at more subtle and subtle levels, and that's so, and also possibly sometimes not so subtle levels, you know?
Yes.
Yes, you know, to not have it also qualify that, you know, so looking to see if there's, you know, a more subtle, subtle seeing of it.
Uh-huh. And because like that's another being graded.
Right, and another qualified.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I was on this call this morning and the person facilitating me said, and that, you do see that as a pretty, you know, regular process for people? And it's like, no, I didn't. But yes, now I do. You know, that it was kind of that gross, that's the process of getting identified with ego.
Yeah.
You know, oh, okay, thank you for reflecting that back to me.
Yeah. It just is, you know, I was listening to some past guidance sessions and, you know, just hearing the guide say, you know, it is, it's this group is just the time to just bring that all up, and this is what I'm hearing, and this is how I'm attending to it. This is, you know, the practice that I'm bringing into it. This is what I'm doing about it, so.
And as you're saying, I think that might be one of the questions, because again, I wasn't aware. It wasn't like, oh, don't talk about it. Okay, I won't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware of that conversation.
Uh-huh.
So now maybe the question is, oh, is there anything that we're not allowed to talk about?
Yeah.
And then let's talk about that.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that process we did in a recent retreat.
Uh-huh.
What is the thing
that
you never, you won't bring to group?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, oh, there's nothing. Wait, let me look.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There is something.
In a way, it's a treasure hunt, isn't it?
To just
look and see what that is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you just said it's a treasure hunt. It's the process of freedom.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Because.
Ah, I love this conversation, and I love I love practice. It's such a relief to know that it's okay to talk about whatever's going on.
Such
a relief to not have to look like I got it all together.
I talk about an energy drain.
Energy drain. It's a very, it's a dark, scary, lonely place to constantly have to look like I have it all together. It's really, really tough. Something I've been looking at recently, and a couple of fun analogies from work in the wildland fire kind of environment have come up around it. Like, the one is, I've noticed this kind of conditioned conversation come up around practice recently around, you know, like, as if there's some kind of, like, levels or milestones or whatever. You get to a certain one, and then it's not okay to go back and explore this stuff that happened earlier. You know, or it's not okay to kind of be hit with a wave of self-hate or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that has to be like a thing of the past.
Yeah.
It uses things like the 2013 no more feeling bad to beat the person.
Yeah.
You know? It's
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And the analogy I saw in work, for example, is, you know, there's in work and in fire, there's a number of different kind of hierarchy. There's steps, you know? And like, so then there's a division supervisor, and then once you get to the point where you're like an operations section chief, you're overseeing like hundreds, maybe thousands of people, and they're all kind of looking to you for information and guidance. And there's conditioning can get to this point where it's like, now that you've got that qualification, that you're at this level, you can't ever be afraid, you can't ever have any questions. You can't ever not know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ever ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically talking. I mean, basically, this person is in a place where he needs connection and assistance more than ever.
Yeah.
His well-being and performance, and everyone else's well-being and performance, depends on him being willing to ask for help, to acknowledge where he's at, to be honest with himself and others about where he's at, and to seek support.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. To just see that, how conditioning just wants to, like, Yeah, I didn't. I got this image of, like, you know, just an animal or something. Just get him away from the herd.
Run him off to the side.
Get him cornered. You know, and then keep them with that conversation of conditioned mind.
Uh-huh.
And when you can see that, like, where would we need to be more connected? You know, when the well-being of all these folks is there in your story.
Yeah.
That well-being.
Yeah, and the irony, of course, is that when I go back and I look at the times when there's been the highest level of performance in myself or projecting on other people, it's coming from that place of openness, of transparency, hey, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I was really stuck here. I need help. Do you know the answer to this? And, like, the willingness to kind of be humble
and
ask for assistance and to be open.
Yeah.
That's when life says, okay.
Yeah.
It just shows up, you know, and then works through this person and miracles happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a delight. The other process I've been seeing, and another kind of work analogy is this process of trying to win at practice, mm-hmm. or trying to win at life, mm-hmm. type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's this experience sometimes in practice that it feels like things start getting thrown at this practitioner, mm-hmm. and they're like, "Woo!" You know, it feels like high level challenger, like kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's this conditioned kind of response of, like trying to win at it.
Right.
And I had this wonderful, it just kind of dropped in. I remembered something that's happened at work where we have these exercises, they're sand table exercises where somebody kind of gets put in the hot seat and they're the incident commander in this imaginary scenario. And there's this sand table that's supposed to be the fire. And there's all these people around, high level folks. And you're moving these different pieces on the sand table, kind of, it's an imaginary fire situation. And it's an experience that most people just dread. It's like, I'd avoid like the plague, because the deal is it's like time compressed.
Uh-huh.
And so what would happen in days and days and days out on the fire line in this scenario happens in about 2 hours.
And 2 hours and under the examination
of all these high-level folks and your peers. Mm-hmm. And everybody's looking to see what kind of decisions that you make, and then they'll kind of break them down. And it's meant, you know, you're just going to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
But then in order to kind of like pull out to get that situation where you're going to be able to be practicing making decisions under a lot of stress and tricky situations that don't happen that often, they start throwing, it's like, thing after thing after thing. So like a helicopter crashes, and then it burns up a subdivision, and then like all this, and you're in charge, you know, and it's like, if they just throw this stuff at you, and it's like, it's so easy to get to the point of complete overwhelm and panic and just breakdown, like, bah! And I got coached by one of my mentors as I got kind of picked to go into this situation. Thank you to this wise words. He said, just remember, there's no way to win at a sand table exercise. And that's not actually the point.
Mm-hmm.
You're not meant to succeed. Actually, you can't. You know, you can't succeed. You can't get to the point where everything goes well. Mm-hmm. That's not how it's meant to go.
Mm-hmm.
You're meant to get all this stuff thrown at you. And it's meant to get to the point of failure. Mm-hmm. But along the way, you get to see all this stuff. Wow. You basically get to see your conditioning. You get to see how it works, and that kind of thing. And it was just that, there's a wonderful analogy for practice, in a way that life just kind of throws all this stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, you're completely supported.
Yeah.
I mean, even if on the sand table exercise it falls apart, the big picture that holds it is, it's not meant to make somebody feel bad and humiliated. It's a learning opportunity. And just like practice. So it's not there's no way to win at it.
Yeah.
There's no way to look perfect through the whole thing. And that's not the point. It's simply to see.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how conditioning works. Oh, that's what happens under pressure in that circumstance.
Yeah. Wow. To just see that this is not a contest.
Yeah.
There's no getting to the end.
Yeah.
There's no prize
for
being the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and what a great thing to have that analogy of that other experience in life to, you know, to just know it's all just an opportunity to see.
Yeah.
It's all just an opportunity for information.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We're not, you know. You know, and you know, life's got our back, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's just
in
there,
a major way.
And in that way too, it's presenting the opportunities that you know.
It's really a gift.
Here you go.
Yeah,
back to the treasure. Here you go. This is
something
to look at.
That's so great.
Yeah.
This fellow Michael Mee wrote a book, I think it was called Fate and Destiny, but in there he's talking about how in life there's no way to win, in the sense that there is a lot of difficult things that are going to happen in life that there is no way to protect oneself from. There's conditioning is always trying to kind of orchestrate things so that I'll win the game of life, so that painful thing and this unfortunate, unskillful thing, so that won't happen. Mm-hmm. And this author was saying there's no way in that sense to win. Mm-hmm. There's also no way to lose.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to lose.
Yeah.
It's all for us.
It's all for us. And I don't know what this rose is. Like, there's no permanent win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that in that moment, we win. And you know, it's like, you know, and, you know, aligning with the heart, just being present, being here, it just feels like, wow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It feels like the best win ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean we, oh, well, you know, we got there.
Right.
And then, you know, you can go to sleep again. And then, you know? Yeah. But it's just a moment by moment thing.
In a moment by moment thing. Yeah. And we're totally supportive.
Yeah.
I love that because, you know, the kindness in that is so huge because, okay, so if we're doing this sand table exercise to fight fires, but we don't want to be mean to the person who's doing the thing, and, you know, but guess what? When the fire comes, that stuff's going to happen. And houses are going to burn and people's lives are going to be in danger. And in Zen practice, we are going to die. That is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, we're training for that.
Yeah.
So it's so, you know, it feels so, oh, it's not nice to put that kind of pressure on someone.
Yeah.
But to do that in that way of training, it's what we want.
It is what we want. And it's, as you were saying that, it's too, it's honoring the person's adequacy.
Exactly.
You know, we don't have to be nice. We don't have to, like, orchestrate the whole thing so that
they
don't feel bad and they don't have a bad experience. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
If we're here and we're having this experience, we're adequate to it. And
exactly. I've really, really been enjoying that about practice, of just that place of, you know, I talked about this in some context, but I had a recent scenario where, you know, something came up. And it was just one of those, okay, all right, let's look at this. And I realized about whatever period of time into looking at it that it was not fun. I was wishing it hadn't happened. And I hated it. And I was irritated with the people involved. And why did they? And then realized, wow, I'm missing the point here completely. Because what this is an opportunity to train. You know, to look at, to just practice with this. And at least for me, when I do that, all that irritation and that anger and all of that is only coming from the conditioned pressure being put on this person. And I don't want to be under that pressure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then when it's seen from that lens of like, yeah, train me in the sand table, man, because I'd much rather have the training here than to risk people's lives. You know, when I'm, and so, you know, with practice, it's like, I want to see it now. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, I think it's what that t-shirt we had was about. I don't want to tiptoe through life to arrive safely at death, where conditioning can just keep everything on top of me that I avoided training with along the way.
Wow. And to just see that everything that is presented is a training.
Everything.
And we, you know, I don't know, and we can't even know what it is we're training for, I mean, in a way, you know? It's like, okay, and then later on, you know, oh, wow, I'm so glad that I had that opportunity. But, you know.
Good point. It's like then we're in life circumstances where we see the training come out. But you're right. If the process is the outcome, then it's the training itself that is the whole deal.
It is the training itself. And I love that, to just look at, you know, because we all have those times when I'm like, oh, God, you know, why this, you know, and then, you know, to just look at it as, you know, this is an opportunity for training.
Exactly.
It is the process, and, all that content stuff just shifts, and what is the training here?
And now, as you say that, going back to the first conversation, it's that, I had this funny moment, oh my gosh, the other night where, you know, so I'm working on this big project and it's fine, it's coming to an end, and I really thought it was at the end. So I had gathered all this stuff and I was ready to, it was going to happen, and then realized there was one really, this was like 8 o'clock at night, critical detail that had not happened with it. And the disappointment was giant. And when I just thought, I often think of this, there was a scene in a movie, I think it was Fish Called London, where Kevin Kline, you know that actor? They go through this whole thing, this really elaborate thing to steal this diamond. And, you know, they've got it all set up, blah, blah, blah. And the last thing is to, you know, crack the safe, and they, you know, they finally do it. They open it, the safe is empty, and he just goes, disappointed. I just stood there and I just went, disappointed. And it was like exactly like that first conversation, like, not turning away from it. Mm-hmm. Not like, okay, that's totally fine. I can practice with this. You know? But just that was the experience of just the disappointment of it.
You know, not turning away from it, but in that disappointed, what did I see? It is complete acceptance and embracing of it, and it's that humor that signals that we're at center, and this is
it's like all the windows open, letting it blow through. You know, because the way, sort of the, now I shouldn't be disappointed, and it's okay, and then fall trapped in there. You know, we're trapped in there with it. You know, just like we were talking about in that first conversation of like, you know, okay, no, I'm not feeling bad. We're at 2013. We're not feeling bad. You know, that's not.
Yeah.
But with that, like, what? I mean, this is, because someone said in the workshop yesterday, loved it. Well, it must be an experience because I'm having it. So this is what's going on.
Yeah.
To add a story to it, that's the suffering. But just to let the experience be what it is, and have it be mentored, and have it be. And then there's always a joy with that, because there's like a, wow, if this disappointment can happen, and this, you know, content can happen, and there can, as you say, there can be that humor and that lightness and that, or, you know, it might not necessarily be humor, but, you know, whatever holding of it is, then we're okay. You know, no matter what.
And we're all okay. It's like, you know, you can just feel the difference in the energy, like, when that's shared versus, oh my God, this didn't happen, and I don't know what I'm going to do about it, and then, you know, we're all like, oh, So it's just it's just interesting to watch that whole energetic.
I have another little example of that yesterday that was one of those tiny things but so huge. So we were in the car for a long time, and it's challenging for the body, you know, to be in the car that long and then sitting down, you know, for hours and hours and hours. And so my position in the car was such that it could have so easily been a process of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was a process of, when we talk about that, taking care of the person, you know, and that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a, you know, I mean, very likely, it's the body's gonna hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know, at some, you know, during this at some point after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So let me sit in the most supportive way that
mm-hmm.
I can possibly
mm-hmm.
sit,
mm-hmm.
and pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that it's so interesting to describe it that could seem like a let me be the right person and good. But in fact, what it feels like to me, at least, is that I receive so much in that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it does take care of the body.
Yeah.
But it also keeps me in a place of paying attention and out of a story of like, God, if only I could just, you know, lie down. And it's amazing. And then again, I think the reason I thought of it is, again, there's that experience of, this is an experience of joy in a situation where it would more be like a, at very least, buckle down and survive it.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's not. It's an experience of, wow, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This is so much fun to have a practice where we don't have to suffer here.
I was going to say, would you say this is what we practice for?
This
I
is
mean,
what we
it's
practice
like
for.
Completely irrelevant of the content.
Completely.
And we're not able to control that sometimes the body is going to have to be in some really uncomfortable situations.
Well put.
And to have that practice
well put.
Of being with that person through anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. That's it exactly, Sequoia, because it's like, you know, is it kind to put the body, well, is it kind for the body to be put in that situation? Is it, you know, that's kind of irrelevant because that's what I'm going to do today because I really want to.
Yeah.
And so would that be smart to do that every day? Definitely not, you know. But it's so great to have the ability to, in the unusual circumstances where that is, what's going on, like flying to Africa, really good to have the ability to practice with that. Because that's a place of freedom versus that place of like, you know, we can get trapped in the content, even if the content feels like the right thing. Well, I eat these things and I don't eat these things, even if it's all good stuff, right? And I treat the body this way and I don't treat the body that way, even if it's all good stuff. You know, that could just be the trap on the other side of duality.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're practicing for freedom.
For freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like all the conversations are coming together like a Rubik's Cube. But I can't do a Rubik's Cube. I would like to try someday again. But letting go of the outcome, right? Anyway, I read a book recently called Go For No.
Uh-huh.
And it's like overcoming rejection, you know, like actually trying to get people to say no.
Going for rejection instead of avoiding rejection.
Yeah, and the book, I listened to it, I don't know how many times, like 10 times. Because it was so powerful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that same thing of the sand table. You know, it's like, if you do it enough, you just kind of become, you kind of see everything around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you overcome that fear of no or rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about how, like, Thomas Edison, how many times he failed before he made all these discoveries.
Yeah.
You know, home run averages, there's just so many strikeouts as there are hits, or more even.
Mm-hmm.
And how the most successful salespeople get the most no's. And, you know, it was just a huge insight for me, just because I've always lived in this little bubble you know, making sure I was always successful, you know, or not failing.
Right.
Or, you know, and this person says to walk around saying, I fail all the time. I fail big and I fail often. You know?
Yeah. And wait, it's like it goes back to our first conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, just toying around trying to get it all right,
mm-hmm.
avoiding those things that, you know, don't look good.
Yeah.
And somehow we think that that's, you know, conditioned mind with possibly that's going to end to some kind of, end some good outcome.
Yeah. Well, it isn't. It just keeps you tiptoeing through life, right? Mm-hmm. Carefully. And so the way that I don't know the mystery of how it's working in all the other content, but I do know that just recently I went through a big piece of karma and survived it miraculously, because conditioning didn't think I would, of course. But we always do, right? and so through it, I wasn't afraid.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I couldn't do anything wrong, because I was just there to watch everything going
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, and as pointed out in another conversation, I was just grateful to see, like, I didn't feel that trying to get away from it feeling.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, let's just avoid this, let's cover it up, let's just do the easy way, you know, make it all better, and just, you know, which is kind of that thing of just being nice about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was more like, no, I'm going to stand my ground, and I'm going to see what this is about,
mm-hmm.
and be present, and, you know, or at least attempt as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so, like, amazingly different,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's like sitting in the car, you know, not being okay with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of, I get this, like, bring it on attitude versus,
uh-huh.
you know.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, run away from it attitude.
Uh-huh.
And conditioned mind would have us think that that's just going to be the worst place
mm-hmm.
to be,
mm-hmm.
that kind of going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like your experience was not that.
No, I mean, it's like sitting in the car. It's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't use the word fun, maybe, but I'd much rather be doing something else, you know, like
mm-hmm.
getting a massage or, you know, something. Yet, I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I really want to see this.
And exactly.
Yeah.
It's what you see
mm-hmm.
in that.
Right.
Is that, you know, what is wanted by the heart, by, you know, what's authentic. It's like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus that nice, comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other with the money intensive, I saw a lot about just the perspective of not enough and something wrong. You know, the opposite of abundance, basically deprivation,
mm-hmm.
scarcity, and related. It's related to the other piece. There's this process going on of looking to see what I should be doing or getting or, you know,
mm-hmm.
different than... It's always looking for something different,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
of how it should be different,
mm-hmm.
which is similar to that. So it's like the experience I'm having, so it must be an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, so there's this experience of karma and conditioning going on, and that same process of it shouldn't be going on. It's the deprivation scarcity process, right? It should be different than that. There's something else that should be there.
Yeah.
And just seeing how that's always operating, you know, kind of under the floorboards,
mm-hmm.
and to bring it to the surface and to say, to see it first, but then to switch the process to sort of like, okay, I'm not going to... That process is that process, which is the process of ego. I'm going to do the process, you know, I'm, in quotes, going to do the process of all that is available to me, you know, and all that's in abundance. You know, if it's an abundance of karma, then that's what's there.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an abundance of rain, then that's what's there, you know, or abundance of air and the leaves falling from the trees, mm-hmm. you know, all of the things going on. And what I saw about it was the conditioning is always telling me how I shouldn't have left my job because I don't have enough money, which is like a complete lie. But anyway, that part of it we won't even talk about. But what I mean is it's always telling me I shouldn't have come and done this and a lot of the time. And what I saw about it was it doesn't see all the things that have happened because I did it.
Right.
You know, like, it's just a complete perspective that is not true and missing a whole other perspective, you know, that is really happening.
It's the whole focus of attention, isn't it? It's like so, there's just, it's such a way bigger experience than what our attention is allowed to rest on.
Exactly.
By the, you know, under the direction
right.
of that system that wants to just siphon it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, back to the keeping it at the same energy level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's just astounding what's happened since I've been over here. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way to describe the abundance of practice and guidance and
mm-hmm.
the being around the Sangha and the guides and the, I mean, just, but it just completely misses the whole, so I was so grateful to see all of that. Like, you know, just to say, shut up. Like, look at all this going on.
and that's a good point, too. And there's abundance, just the process of abundance. And it would just want to pin it down to one narrow experience of abundance, which has to do with money.
And that,
to just broaden that whole thing and say, oh, my gosh, there's just so much abundance. Abundance. Who would have known, you know, just the Sangha and the guidance and the opportunities and the, you know, to just see all of that that money can't buy, actually.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
You know, like I asked a few years ago that I wanted to practice as much as possible with my current situation, and I got it. But, you know, conditioning completely misses that point, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, so if you talk about winning, well, I'm winning, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like, astounding, you know, just the deprivation and scarcity perspective can be so... It's a habit, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's like a,
mm-hmm.
like we were talking about with that energy level. It mm-hmm. keeps you at that level. And it is the conditioned world,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, you're out there and...
Mm-hmm.
That's what everyone's doing, and so it just, it's like this energetic pull, you know, and to just choose to be in the other stream of energy or whatever, you know, the awareness and all that, yeah.
And would you say it was just that whole thing of going for no, that just, you know, just go for that no, just
mm-hmm.
go for that, what we're told that we can't go for is what opened the door to all of that awareness
mm-hmm.
of the abundance.
Yeah,
it's here.
Yeah, it's all here, and the fear of the no is just an illusion too,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
you just keep going for it,
mm-hmm. knocking down those illusions.
Knocking down all those
mm-hmm.
no's, getting as many no's. And to be, what's so funny about it is I haven't been able to get that many.
since there's been the attention on getting them or going for it.
You have to specifically ask for the no.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can't just say, well, you know, because I'm conditioned to go for yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm conditioned to make sure the other person says the right thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, that I say the right thing to get them to say the right
uh-huh.
thing that isn't rejecting me or
uh-huh.
rejecting what
uh-huh.
I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
And so I have to change even my language to say, you know, something that will actually elicit a no, because people don't like to say no either, I've noticed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And so it's the whole thing, you just see everything about all the conditioning around it,
uh-huh.
you know,
uh-huh.
just come up. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. One wonders if, you know, it's just that someone coming at you with the please
mm-hmm.
don't say no that makes the no.
Yes.
It just, you know, elicits the no.
I almost had one person that said, you can say no.
Uh-huh.
Like, I said that to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And they still didn't say no. So, you know, there's so much in it to talk about.
Yeah.
lots of strands sort of floating around in this conversation. But one thing that just popped up was the thing about not feeling bad is just like not to be angry.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, the conditioning can take that and say you can't feel bad.
Okay.
And that's not what's being pointed to. It's really not being stuck there. It's
uh-huh.
not massaging. It's not,
uh-huh.
you know, indulging. It's not making that some kind of identity.
Uh-huh.
It's not like I can't ever have feelings that come up that feel bad.
Uh-huh.
But that's what conditioning we
take. Uh-huh.
So it takes to avoidance
okay.
or denial.
Uh-huh.
So just I hadn't made that connection.
Uh-huh. So seeing the connection between the precepts,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, not to be angry, and how
not
that's not pointing to, you know, I'll never get angry,
right.
you know, and seeing that same correlation with not to feel bad.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was helpful.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So what's arising as I'm listening to this conversation and earlier conversations today is just kind of the possibility of how different life is when we can just kind of move with it.
Uh-huh.
You know? So around abundance, what I looked at around the issue of scarcity and abundance is mostly around time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get into too much scarcity stuff around them. I get into a lot of scarcity stuff around time.
Mm-hmm.
So what came up first was, you know, I can flip that over and say, the reason I have scarcity of time is that I have an abundance of things I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a boss who just talked about having high-class problems.
Mm-hmm.
He would have called that a high-class problem.
Yeah.
There are so many things I find interesting and enjoy doing that it feels sometimes like there's not enough time to do
mm-hmm.
it. So that was fun just to flip that. But then I just realized in the course of listening to the group today that, you know, Sherry talks about, at the moment of death, you'll see how important your to-do list was.
Mm. Uh-huh,
and,
your to-do list, yeah.
Yeah. So what just came up was that a number of weeks ago, I have this big list of things I want to do, and by when I want to do them, and all of that. And instead, I was spending 8 hours a day in a hospital room,
mm-hmm.
where there's nothing to do,
mm-hmm.
and except watch someone snooze. And I was doing some reading, you know, and it was absolutely fine.
Uh-huh.
And you know, if you had told me I'm going to stick you someplace in the room to sit for 8 hours, I would have said, well, I can't do that. It was impossible. But it was not hard at all because that's what was going on.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And it was like, it was one of those moments where the to-do list became much less important.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, conditioning would want to make that the lesson, so that, you know, don't pay any attention to the things you want to do. You know, it would take that as the learning,
mm-hmm.
and then the situation changed,
mm-hmm.
and then there was a kind of easing back into the home. And easing back into the things to do, and now I'm doing these things on the to-do list, and it's perfectly fine. And it just feels like this whole process has been. I know, I'm thinking about that. You know, when we used to go to Point Lobos and watching the kelp. You know, just go
yeah.
with the whatever the tribe is doing, and it feels like that's the invitation. And what conditioning wants us to do is get rigid.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the tribe is doing, we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, so to have the experience, you know, in the last few weeks of having the tribe go one way and just having it be okay,
uh-huh.
and you know, if I've been like in a I have to say, if I'd been in the waiting room waiting for my car to be repaired, I might have had a different attitude. But because of the sort of, well, sort of the intensity of the situation, it was easier to get into it. But it was a lesson to just get that. That's fine. You know, when necessary, that's what you do.
Uh-huh.
And then that doesn't mean that you get stuck there.
Uh-huh.
You just then when the time is right and the conditions are right, then you do the next thing.
Uh-huh.
And it just feels like it's going to. A lesson in flexibility and a lesson in how, I was thinking of this in that call this morning, a lesson in how life is so there when we're there.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's a meeting that happens.
Uh-huh.
And when we resist, we miss it.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like life grabbed us by the throat and said, look, here's the lesson. If we're there, it's there.
Yeah.
But it never imposes itself.
Yeah.
It's such a a respectful interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been really appreciating that in the whole course of the discussions this morning.
Mm-hmm. A respectful interaction.
Yeah.
That's great. So just life is just there. It's the constant. And we can come to meet it and meet the flow of life. And as you experienced, you know, just be in that acceptance of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. May not have been at all what, you know, ego would have chosen. But in meeting, in that meeting of life and being with where life is at that moment, there's just okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm really appreciating the refuge of this year now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, alongside that, just the events of my own personal life,
mm-hmm.
whatever that is, there's, you know, stuff going on in the world that's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can get so caught up in that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I realize it's such a source of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day I said, you know, this thing needs to be nurtured. She doesn't need to be. She doesn't need to be hung out on this particular line of suffering.
Yeah.
And all it takes is coming back to this year now, actually.
Yeah.
And also, what I choose to focus on in this year now.
Mm-hmm.
But the contrast has been interesting, too. The ease of just living with how life goes and the suffering of being in such opposition to,
yeah.
to
yeah.
what I, some things I see.
Yeah. That's what I was hit with, too. You know, just that, as you talked about it, just that ease that comes from just meeting life and, you know, just that dis-ease that comes from pushing against it and,
mm-hmm.
you know, thinking there should be something different going on. It should be, no matter what it is, you know, whether it's what's going on in the world or, you
mm-hmm.
know, right here in front of us, but to just meet it
mm-hmm.
and to be with it and to, you know, and to just, maybe it's a bit of going back to, you know, being adequate, you know. It's like whatever is life's presenting now, I'm adequate to it. I can rest in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you for saying that. Because one other piece of this is that some of what's happening in the world is happening in this county.
Mm-hmm.
It's very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, where there's such a temptation to just either get really angry or just get out.
Yeah.
Just withdraw from the whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And to just, part of experiencing adequacy is staying in a way that's not suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, staying in a way that feels grounded
mm-hmm.
and authentic
mm-hmm.
and true and not, and but not organized around being in opposition.
Yeah, wow. Wow. It's a great place.
And it's a challenge.
Yeah, what a great clock this place.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
to just be there, present, and not in opposition. And you know what? It's, and maybe going back to, it's like there's this whole big experience that, you know, our attention is maybe resting on one thing, but, you know, there's a whole lot going on that
yeah.
may not be, just
yeah.
to know that that, you know, there may be more than our attention is resting on at this moment. Or, you know, that's possible.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm kind of getting a little stuck in that place again about you're not being standing, so you can't talk in group. So, of course, I'm going to talk in group. So, let's see. Yeah, lots of things have come up. I really want to listen to that book about no.
Going for no?
Going for no. I'm going to listen to it 10 times. So, I'm gonna. So let's see. There's this thing in my life that is objectively bad.
Objectively bad.
Yeah. And I can keep that thing in my life as long as I do these other things that are objectively good.
So it's kind of like a balance.
Yes.
Or okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Which is just occupies the contents of the mind a lot.
Uh-huh.
That whole balance. If you do these good things, then you can have that one bad thing.
Sort of like going, if you can go have a triple banana split if you run for 10 miles, that, yeah.
And I can sense, and I think two or three different conversations this morning have put words to a kind of center place to look at that from. And they won't stay. I can't get them to go through my mind or come out of my mouth. But I think it's something like, okay, just see where it goes. That's all.
That's all. There's that awareness there. There's the watching, seeing this going on. So just see where it goes.
Yes, and the opposite, okay, there it is. The I guess it's self-hate, or the ego, or the, whatever it is, says, you're just fooling yourself. Mm-hmm. You want that bad thing, and you are willing to do all those good things that you don't really want to do, just so you can have it.
Uh-huh.
So, and that is believable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's in essence saying...
And it might be true.
Yeah.
So what?
It's its way of saying we're the bad thing. You know, you're the bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's what you're identified with. Or me, you know, that voice. Yeah. Of course it's going to go for that.
So now, scrambling. Nine karma. So, I have an experience. This different subject, really quickly. I went to a Christmas party. I was a small Christmas party, just some of my golf buddies. And a huge part of me is not a party girl. Parties are just, they're not her thing. And even if it's just her regular golf buddies, they are not her thing. If it hadn't been labeled party, it would have been different. And I watched the energy get all twisted around as I was getting ready to go. And I just stopped and I said, no, no, not that. No, this is not, if this is just self-hate, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. If this is something authentic, mm-hmm. you're not the one who has to do this. Mm-hmm. Just relax. It'll mm-hmm. be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And an aspect of this party was you had to bring a white elephant gift, mm-hmm. which is supposed to be kind of either funny or just something that's on a shelf in your house that you haven't seen for 15 years. And I was just something totally useless and or funny. And at the last minute, just before I walked out the door, it just arose what it was.
Uh-huh.
And it was the absolute hit of the party. It was so clear that I didn't think it up. It was just given. It was really fun. The whole party, the whole thing was fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very. Okay, I see why. I just realized why I'm telling you the story. Why she wants to talk about that. Because running right parallel to that is Sijin. If you would align with life, just be present more often, you'd have that experience more often. You'd be the life of the party. That's just what it it's just never, and it's not going to stop doing that. It's,
no.
I keep thinking, you'll quit doing
that. You know, and, yeah, and as long as it's working, you know, it's going back to the not feeling bad thing, I suspect that as long as we get, it gets any kind of a rise out of us, you know, it'll keep at it, but seeing it like you just did, and choosing not to go there, it's kind of like what you were doing before you met. No, we're not going there. Mm-hmm. I refuse to engage with you in this. Yeah. And then having Mike come in with that, you know, insight about what to bring, and having it just be the light, you know, the head of the party, and it's like, you know, there was life coming to meet June, handing over the gift, receiving the gift was received both by the recipient and also by the person that had the insight and took the gift, and just seeing how clearly it was what happens when one responds to life. And and it doesn't it's just a bad person to go, it's just a bad energy to go to parties with, or anything with.
It's whole. I think its whole reason to be is just suffering.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
That anxiety, it's a kind of social anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. This person has had a whole life.
I know,
and it's hard to get past.
Yeah.
Because it's very, very intense feeling.
Yeah.
And
yay. Really? You know? Yay, and we have it recorded now that it was fun. That this person had a really fun party time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the not to feel bad is the 12th precept.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The 11th being don't listen to the voices in your head.
That's right.
Not to be in conversation with
not to be in conversation with the voices in your head.
That's
right. Okay, say the 12th again.
It's not to feel bad.
Not to feel bad.
Or in the way not to be